Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's August the 3rd, 2006. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services. He's in Bloomington, Illinois. And then we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bill Mayer. He's at the Elevator in Lexington. In agricultural news, the Senate and the House have both passed bills to allow offshore drilling for natural gas. That should eventually ease the price of nitrogen. And the farm bill, WTO, which should come first, the chicken or the egg debate? Well, that one continues. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, we'll hear a commentary from the Farm Bureau. And then, just after the bottom of the hour, as we do each and every day on the Closing Market Report, we'll hear from a meteorologist. This time around, Peter Levitt will join us to take a complete look at today's agricultural weather forecast. It all happens right here on this edition of WILL AM 580's Closing Market Report.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
In Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The September wheat at 395 and a quarter, down 6 and a quarter today. December futures were off 7 cents at $4.14 a half a bushel. September wheat in Kansas City at 485 and a fast trade at the end of the day did not settle, down just a quarter of a cent at the end of the trade. As corn futures September contract from Chicago, 245, a settlement price there, down 2 and a quarter. December futures at 262, down 2 and a quarter. And the March futures at 276 were off a penny and a half of the day. December contract at 309 and three quarters, down 1 cent. August soybeans, 576, down 5 and three quarters. September futures at 5 and three quarters lower as well, at 581 and a half. And the November's at 5 and three quarters lower, 595 and a half. The settlement price there. November 2007 contract, a year out, down 5 and three quarters too. They had finished at 649 and three quarters. Bean meal futures, August contract at 162.40. They were down a dime for the day. August bean oil at 26.55, off 0.27. August feeder cattle from the Mercantile Exchange, 113.82 and a half. They were 65 cents higher. August live cattle at 82.87 and a half were down a nickel. And the October live cattle were up 37 and a half cents at $87.95 a hundredweight. August lean hogs from the Merc, $69 even, 37 and a half cents lower. Outside markets, crude oil, $75.50 a barrel for the September contract, down 31 cents. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 11,259 now stands 59 points higher for the day. One other note from the marketplace, FC Stone releasing its August 1 U.S. production estimate late yesterday afternoon. FC Stone forecasting the corn crop at 10.887 billion bushels with a yield of 151 bushels the acre. The soybean crop estimated by FC Stone at 3.056 billion bushels with a yield of 41.3 bushels to the acre. On August the 11th, USDA scheduled, of course, to release its first U.S. corn and soybean estimates using field surveys. That release will come out at 7:30 a.m. in the morning.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a complete look at what happened with the numbers in Chicago at the Mercantile Exchange and at the Board of Trade and the cash market as well is Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. Good to talk with you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
Seems like it's been quite a while since we've talked.
It has been. Has it been 2 months?
I think it's been a month. I think you were off for a couple of weeks, and then I was out for 2 weeks, and, it's been a month. So maybe you ought to catch us up on what your chart action looks like at this point, how things have played out over the past 2 weeks for you, and what you made of the action today, please.
Well, the market has been struggling. Now, we did have a good rally yesterday, but anytime you get past that pollination period or past the end of July or you kind of get through July without any real severe weather, the trade gets comfortable enough with crop prospects that the market loses a lot of its emotional fears of not raising a crop. So, we're to the point where we've got a crop made, so to speak, and I know some people will want to argue with me on that, but what the trade is arguing about now is the yield. You know, is the corn yield maybe 145, or is it 148, or 150, or 152? So we're now arguing production within a within a range, like an 800 million bushel range in corn or so. We're arguing on the beans if the bean crop is within 300 million bushels of a range. So we've narrowed the range. So therefore, we've taken a lot of excitement or the fear of not raising a crop or whatnot out of the marketplace. So that's why the market has kind of calmed down in here. We still have the weather gurus calling for hot and dry weather. We still have this and we still have that. But a lot of that is background noise now. Going into what USDA will kind of put the number and kind of put an official number on it, and then the trade will decide whether or not USDA is too high, too low, or fight it, or whatever they want to do on that. So we you know, pretty well lost everything that we gained on that little July rally. We kind of come back to where we were kind of in late June, and now we're trying to stabilize in here, and I think that's what the market's doing. Waiting on the August crop report.
Is it fair enough to say that maybe 250, 240, I'll give you a dime range down there, but might be a low end of the marketplace as we move through the harvest season?
Oh,
for Dease contract.
Well, let's put it this way. Every time we make a bottom or we make a top, nobody gets bearish enough on the decline, and nobody gets bullish enough on the upside. The market always has a tendency to go beyond what you would normally think. And I do know that there's a consensus out there that kind of thinks that maybe this corn supply is tight enough and demand is strong enough that, you know, maybe the 250, 240 might hold the harvest low. I don't know if I want to go that far or not. You know, I do think that we'll probably hold the harvest low above the lows that we've had the past couple of years, so I'm leaving enough room there to drive a couple semis through, Todd. Probably, you know, a lot of it's going to depend upon, you know, but, you know, you just got to keep in mind probably what's going to happen. is that once the combines start rolling, we're going to hear super big yields in the eastern Corn Belt and the western Corn Belt, the same old story. Every time you worry about a short crop, yields are better than expected. So, and then you get into that environment, and you get in an environment where you have maybe a crop that's getting bigger. You'd be surprised probably how much pressure they could put on the market. But I do think that you know, we'll, I think last year's lows are probably safe for now anyway.
And then one other thing I was making note of on the wire service today, a story about ethanol and the price of ethanol per gallon, that it appears that there may be enough ethanol in the marketplace at this point to replace MTBE, and that might be pushing the price of ethanol down. I think that would have some kind of impact on the marketplace for corn.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the new factor in trying to determine the value of corn is the energy component value of that, and that's kind of what we're sorting out. A lot of what we're putting in it is speculation based upon this projection or that projection and this and that. And that's, you know, and that's going to be a real variable from year to year. But I don't know if I want to quite go that far that we've have overproduced ethanol yet. I mean, I do think that there is a big movement, or I think there's going to be increasing movement to, you know, to go to a go to the E85 and use a lot of ethanol and try to remove our dependency from foreign oil. So I'm not too sure we're to the point where we've saturated the ethanol market yet,
but. the story I just read very quickly, and it had to do with MTBE, and ethanol is the replacement is the oxygenate for MTBE. Mm-hmm. But it certainly wouldn't have to do with the 10% ethanol across the border, and nothing to do at all with the E85, really.
Yeah, my biggest concern with ethanol production, and then we talk about using soybean oil for biodiesel, what are we going to do with all the protein? And I think there's a big hang up there. We can maybe, I guess, give it away and pile it up, but that's going to be a big problem or big challenge for us, I think, as we go down the road.
I know dairy producers have been happy around some of those ethanol plants that they're able to put that into their rations, but there's an awful lot of milk out in the United States.
Well,
too.
Yeah, I mean, you have ramifications from that, too, if you give it away. So, I mean, there's all kinds of that's economics, and that's what we're trying to do is, sort out marketplace use the product that we produce.
You know, before I left, we were talking about storing corn, making sure that you had enough storage and you found places to put it, and on the idea that by the time we got to spring of next year that prices would be higher. It looks like that really hasn't changed over the last couple of weeks that I've been out of the country.
Well, I think there's going to be some individual areas that will probably still be short of storage. Remember, we are carrying in a record inventory of both corn and soybeans. Eastern Corn Belt crop looks pretty good. So there's going to be, shortages in storage and piles probably outside. But, we'll work our way through that. But, that's going to happen. I think the thing that probably has more impact on farm income right now is, being bullish corn is probably not bullish farm income, and being bullish soybeans is not necessarily bullish farm income, because I think we're in a situation here where, corn prices could stay high enough that LDPs may not be a big part of the farm income ledger this year, and that has been a major kicker in farm income, and without that, and then corn prices may not go high enough soon enough to offset that loss of LDP payments. So, we're all looking pretty good. I mean, the corn price is holding at 240 or 250. That all sounds good, but I'm not necessarily sure that's good for farm income.
Yeah, sure. It depends on how much the inputs cost, and that lack of LDP and the countercyclical payment, for that matter, could have a huge impact across farm country. Tell me about the bean market very quickly.
Well, the bean market is not as sensitive to weather as corn, simply because we don't have a tight enough balance sheet. Even with the maybe a little smaller acreage than what the market was looking at here 2-3 months ago, we're still going to produce a crop as big or maybe slightly bigger than what demand is, and therefore we don't do any stocks pull down, whereas corn, we're going to pull stocks down in the long run. Bean stocks look like they're going to stay flat. So there's no worry in the trade that we're going to run out of beans anytime soon, or any need to worry that we may have to go to a little higher price to slow down demand to make sure that we don't have to take prices sharply higher later. So soybeans, I think, are kind of in that sideways range. We're kind of down at the bottom end of a sideways range we've been trading in for the past several months, and vulnerable to going lower depending upon what kind of August rains we get.
Dan, we appreciate you being with us.
You're welcome.
Dan Zwicker of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois, joining us here on a Thursday afternoon on the Closing Market Report.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
In today's agricultural news, with demand for natural gas increasing and production levels not keeping pace, the Senate has moved past the Gulf of Mexico Energy Security Act. The act would allow expanded natural gas production in the outer continental shelf. Currently, much of the potential gas production off the U.S. coast is subject to a federal ban on drilling. The Senate passed the bill by a vote of 71 to 25. The bill directs the Secretary of Interior to lease the area within 1 year of the date of enactment. The House has already passed a similar bill. The House and Senate bills need to be reconciled in conference committee before heading to the president's desk. House Ag Committee Chairman Bob Goodlatte is not swayed by arguments that writing a new farm bill would put the U.S. at a disadvantage from a negotiating standpoint in the world trade talks. According to Goodlatte, the U.S. would be at a greater disadvantage if they have not written a new farm bill when WTO talks resume. Goodlatte says that would invite negotiators in Geneva to write farm bill policy for the United States.
I am very much dedicated to continuing the path that we have been going down now all year long, holding farm bill field hearings. We've completed the full committee field hearings now, and in September we will begin the process of hearing from a wide array of different farm and conservation and research and nutrition and trade and other organizations.
Of course, Goodlatte says he'd be willing to consider a delay if a WTO deal is on the horizon.
But not having seen that, and knowing that the American Farm Bureau and a whole host of other farm organizations and other organizations have changes that they would like to make to the current Farm Bill. In fact, I think in their statements they said to continue the current Farm Bill with changes. That effectively means that we have to go through this process anyway.
Goodlatte says that's the case, whether it's tweaks or big changes farm groups want, or changes dictated by budget limits, or WTO legal challenges, like the successful Brazil case against U.S. cotton. But regardless of how a new farm bill's written, Goodlatte says the goal will still be to protect the bottom line for American producers. Although Goodlatte does not agree with the American Farm Bureau Federation's call for an extension of the 2002 Farm Bill, he says he does agree with Farm Bureau's call for renewal of presidential trade promotion authority to pursue non-WTO deals. But he says he's not sure how likely Congress is to renew TPA amid frustration with the WTO process. And on the subject of TPA, the American Farm Bureau Federation says it wants the U.S. to continue having the ability to negotiate trade agreements, which is why the group is calling for an extension of trade promotion authority. Farm Bureau says it will work with the National Association of Manufacturers and the Coalition of Service Industries to ensure continued U.S. leadership in the Doha round of the World Trade Organization talks and work on bilateral free trade agreements. Farm Bureau President Bob Stallman says efforts to reduce trade barriers and expand markets for U.S. agricultural hinges on presidential trade negotiating authority. Stallman notes that U.S. agriculture relies on international markets, making access to those markets vital to the overall success of America's farmers and ranchers. Well, the Secretary of Agriculture has announced some $263 million of money will be freed up in electric loans to provide utilities a way to upgrade services and facilities in nine different states. Through USDA Rural Development Utilities Program, loans and loan guarantees are made to finance the construction or replacement of electric transmission and generation facilities. In the past 6 years, by the way, the rural development has provided more than 900 loans for more than $19 billion through the Electric Loan Program. And finally today, the Chicago Board of Trade is reporting that on the first full day of side-by-side trading of its benchmark agricultural futures contracts, a total of 436,154 contracts traded. About 358,000 were traded via open outcry. 61,000 contracts were traded electronically. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
Well, up next in today's listener opinion forum, Shelby County Farm Bureau's Amy Rochkus says skeptics of ethanol made from corn just don't get it.
The world economy and energy prices have been held hostage by hostilities in the Middle East for some time now. The inflamed rhetoric of a few Arab leaders and terrorist organizations is intended to hurt the United States and Europe by driving up gasoline prices. Fear and psychology are playing a big role in the price of oil. Thank goodness for U.S. agriculture and the accelerating development of biofuels. This is one way to push back on the oil fears and reduce dependence on Persian Gulf oil. But higher oil prices seem to be producing more skeptics and detractors of ethanol at the same time. They don't like tax incentives for ethanol production. They question the net energy balance, whether ethanol requires more fossil fuels to make than it replaces. When this argument was satisfied, they moved on to other objections. Lately, critics are claiming that ethanol production will use up all of the farmland and displace food production. Essentially, they've gone from saying ethanol isn't getting us anywhere to saying ethanol is going too far. Some detractors hold out hope for more exotic fuels like hydrogen. Others think the world will go on finding more oil or conserve it better. Critics underestimate farm productivity and the research into farm-based fuels. Those that do get included, the American Farm Bureau Federation, the United States Department of Agriculture, General Motors, Royal Dutch Shell, BP, Archer Daniels Midland, DuPont, Goldman Sachs Group, Bill Gates, President Bush, President Da Silva of Brazil, and many other big names who support biofuels. No one is expecting biofuels to replace fossil fuels, but they can play a greater complementary role and displace much of the oil we are importing from the Persian Gulf. Biofuels can be an important placeholder in the energy mix until something more revolutionary comes along, but that could be 50 years or more down the road. A technical advisory committee to the United States Department of Agriculture and the Department of Energy determined that biofuels can supply 20% of the nation's transportation fuels by the year 2030. Another goal endorsed by many in agriculture is for America's working lands to provide 25% of total energy consumed in the United States by 2025, while continuing agriculture's outstanding record of food and fiber production. Agriculture will prove the skeptics wrong. This is Amy Rochkis with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochkis' comments are her own and reflect her opinions. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station. We strongly urge listeners like you to become involved as well by sharing your views. To do so, call us at 217-333-0850.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible in part by a grant from Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. For information, call 866-837-9027.
Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing in Lexington, Illinois, joins us on this Thursday afternoon to take a look at the cash grain market. Good afternoon to you, Bill.
Good afternoon, Todd. Welcome back.
Thank you much. It was a good trip to the Ukraine. Tell me what happened in your area in terms of rainfall over the past couple of weeks and how the corn crop is looking.
Well, right here in Lexington, got good rain again last night, one little over an inch. Where I live down closer towards Bloomington, southeast of Bloomington, didn't quite have that much, 2 or 3 tenths, but everything's in good shape in this area. That rain last night really helped. We were needing it after the heat, so I think we're looking at a pretty good-sized crop in the Lexington area anyhow, and probably most of the surrounding area.
Farmers concerned at all about any abortion of the tip of the ear?
Yeah, I am hearing some of that, and I think, of course, that's always a concern. And, you know, we still need to put the weight in there. August, you know, makes a difference sometimes between a great crop and a good crop.
Just keep the rains coming just a little bit at a time. Rain makes grain. Tell me about the cash grain market there and how it's held up in the face of the drop.
We've seen a little bit of weakness here in the past week, and, you know, it's kind of hard when you got these kind of, I mean, the levels are poor on bases no matter how you look at it. Kind of hard to talk about improvement, getting worse and better when you're at these levels. I think my message that I'm trying to get across to people here as far as the cash grain goes is to, you know, look ahead here and think about the harvest period and even all the way out to January. This idea of, you know, I'm going to deliver the corn in October and then decide what I'm going to do, that may not be the way things work this year. I think that you really need to grain buyer and kind of see what the situation may be.
And your bids for the day?
On the cash corn, 215, 222 for new crop, 535, and 545 on the beans.
Bill, we appreciate it.
Thanks, Don.
Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Marketing. He's located at the elevator there in Lexington, Illinois. In about 2 minutes, we'll talk with ag meteorologist Peter Levitt about the weather. Your regional newscast comes up right now.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. Both candidates for the 52nd District Illinois Senate seat say they support a freeze on gasoline taxes once prices reach a certain level. Democratic candidate Mike Frericks is renewing his call for rolling back the tax once the price of gasoline goes above $2.50 a gallon. A spokesman for his Republican opponent, former lawmaker Judy Meyer, says she supports the idea and has backed similar measures in the past. The state treasurer is expanding a fund that invests in Illinois-based private equity firms committed to investing in Illinois companies. Treasurer Judy Bartopinka today announced that the Technology Development Fund will increase from $50 million to $75 million. The treasurer's office says in its nearly 2 years of existence, the fund has helped 11 Illinois companies, created or retained 200 jobs, and seen a 15% return on its investments. Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois contends Israel needs to defang the Hezbollah guerrillas based in Lebanon. Durbin says what Israel is doing to Hezbollah now is what the U.S. would be doing if a neighboring nation killed American soldiers and fired rockets at this country. Meanwhile, Illinois' junior senator says Americans want the current conflict to end as quickly as possible under terms that create a safe Israel and thriving Lebanon. Barack Obama told visiting constituents on Capitol Hill today that Israel needs to be mindful that it's dealing with a Lebanon that is essentially a nation held hostage by Hezbollah. Indiana environmental officials are concerned about what happens after you flush at a state highway rest stop. The Indiana Department of Environmental Management says 16 out of 36 state-run highway rest stops violated sewage treatment guidelines over the past 4 years. Grammy-winning opera singer Sylvia McNair is planning to teach at Indiana University as she recovers from breast cancer surgery. The 50-year-old soprano underwent a radical mastectomy last month. McNair received her master's degree from IU in 1983. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
And I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Thursday afternoon. We're joined now by Pete Levitt to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast around the globe. Good afternoon to you, Pete.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Oh, it's a lot more comfortable today than it has been for a while. 83 degrees, 66% humidity, and it's going to cool off for the evening just a bit.
Yeah, it is. And though actually there's still a few showers just in the northeast corner of Champaign County up toward Kankakee this afternoon. They'll develop further as they move southeastward, so it'll be the southeast Illinois that will get that precipitation. Then we have clearing weather for the weekend. Friday, Saturday, Sunday looks very good across Illinois Corn Belt states. And then we'll look at another cold front coming toward the middle of next week. This cold front will maybe have a few showers with it. It won't have the moist air ahead of it to produce the kind of rains we saw in the northern portions of the state this morning. Maybe some light to moderate showers about Wednesday, and then clearing and cooler again still. And so the outlook is really quite favorable, a rather pleasant week in store, I think.
Tell me about this past week and the heat that we've had over the week and a half or 2 weeks here, and what kind of damage you might think could have been done to the crop, if any.
Well, I think the damage, of course, was done before some beneficial rains arrived in the western part of the Corn Belt, in that area from the eastern Dakotas, Nebraska, northwestern Iowa, southwestern Minnesota, had a lot of heat and a lot of dry weather, and this impacted the corn crop principally because it's July is corn's month to get good weather, rain, and moderate temperatures to grow on. They didn't get it. The rains did come. That will probably arrest the decline for some time. Some areas got anywhere from 1.5 to 3.5 inches of rain in parts of those regions. Not the whole region, however, but a good portion of it. So I would say the decline has probably been arrested, but we still are looking for less than a good prospects for the corn crop in the northwest 40% of the belt. Then farther east, things get much better as you come eastward through eastern Iowa, Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, where prospects, except for some unlucky folks that didn't get the rain, the prospects there look really good for a good crop.
And then we haven't checked in on South America for a while, of course, because it's not within their growing season, but they should be recharging some soil moisture levels. How's that gone down to the south?
Well, Brazil has done a little bit better. They had some showers in the south, fair weather in the north, where they're harvesting some of their crops like coffee and the like. The problem area has been in the Argentine, and particularly in Buenos Aires province, where they've had very little rain earlier in the season, and they did get some showers. They got, as a matter of fact, up to 3 inches or so in southeastern portions, which benefited the wintering wheat crop there. So that's the area that needed the rain. Some of it got some. I would say the Argentine still isn't up to par. Brazil looks like it's in generally good shape throughout.
And we appreciate you being with us today, Peter.
My pleasure, Don.
Peter Levitt, agricultural meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens on Thursday afternoons. Remember to tune in again tomorrow morning at 8:49. That for our first look at the agricultural markets on the pre-opening commodity market report. And that if you didn't catch something on the air and you'd like to go back and hear it, you can right there at WILLAG.org. Don't forget to sign up for our weekend newsletter and our podcast. It's all available on our website at WILLAG.org. For your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations, I'm Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. You have a great afternoon.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at LincolnLandAgriEnergy.com.